sharp gets smaller.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith. Usually, when the government revises how much something will cost, it's adding zeros. Many zeros. But not this time. The White House says the Troubled Asset Relief Program, or TARP, is going to cost $200 billion less than they thought it would. Here to help us explain this is Ashley Milne-Tite in New York. She joins us live. Good morning, Ashley.
Good morning.
So why is TARP going to be cheaper than they thought it was going to be?
Well, this is partly because the banks are basically repaying government funds a lot faster than the government expected. So far, the Treasury Department has lent $370 billion in bailout money to companies that got in trouble during the crisis. And reports say it now expects to get back most of that. I mean, everything except $42 billion. And those losses come mainly from the car companies and AIG. But the big financial institutions like JP Morgan Chase, Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs, they've all repaid their bailout funds at this point. And Bank of America recently said it was going to join them. And that just leaves Citibank sort of waiting to repay its loans. And apparently it's racing to try and do so. The Financial Times reports this morning they would like to pay back a big chunk within the next week or so. But their situation's a bit more tricky because of just how involved the government is in keeping them afloat.
This sounds like quite a turnaround for the financial institutions.
Well, it's quite a change from some of the turnaround, certainly from what the government was expecting. They had made some pretty depressing predictions back in the summer that they thought the bailout program could lose about $341 billion. They thought that a lot more could potentially go wrong in the financial system and they'd have to help out again. But really what's helping now is the banks. They very much want to get out from under the government's thumb, mainly because the longer the government's involved with them, the more say it has in the way they do business, and they really want to be independent again.
Ashley Milne-Tite in New York, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Some signs the job market might be turning around had U.S. markets up on Friday. The Dow Jones Industrial Average had gained 0.2%, and that same news gave Japanese markets a boost this morning. Tokyo's Nikkei Index added 1.4%. In Europe, though, London's FTSE is off 0.6%, that partly on news the U.K. might start taxing bankers' bonuses. That is, of course, a big issue on this side of the pond. Today is the deadline for Goldman Sachs shareholders to submit proposals for the firm's annual meeting. One hot-button issue, how much money Goldman pays its people. Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson has more.
Goldman Sachs plans to hand out almost $17 billion in bonuses, so the company has embarked on a charm offensive, trying to convince shareholders that everything's under control.
Had this happened 2 years ago, there would be very little chance, I think, of a shareholder revolt. Today, I think it's a very different story.
Charles Elson directs the Weinberg Center on Corporate Governance at the University of Delaware. He says investors like the 97% return on their stock this year, but many are concerned too much of the firm's profits are going to employees. Not everyone's upset, though.
It is at the high end, but then again, the results are also at the high end.
That's Eric Marinac, chief investment officer at Victory Capital Management, which owns stock in Goldman. He says shareholders already have as much say as they need.
You're always free to sell your stock.
Marinac says Goldman has to pay its people what the market demands, but he's okay with more stock-based compensation to encourage long-term thinking. Golden handcuffs, he calls it. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Bank of America. 1 year into a 10-year, $1.5 trillion investment in low to moderate income communities. And is distributed by American Public Media. For information about underwriting this or other APM programs such as Marketplace Money, visit AmericanPublicMedia.org.
This year, a lot of us are watching our holiday spending very closely and, of course, bargain hunting. One of the biggest American bargains of all time, though, at least anecdotally, was the purchase of Alaska. We bought the state in 1867 from Russia for about $7 million. David Barker is a professor of finance at the University of Iowa. He says that bargain is a bust and we paid too much. David, good morning.
Good morning.
So Alaska was purchased by William Seward, Secretary of State under Lincoln. From what I understand, it was about 2 cents an acre. Is that
right? Yes, that's right.
Seems like a pretty good deal.
Well, it does. And I first got interested in it as an example to teach in class of, you know, the best real estate deal ever in history. the more I looked into it, you know, the weaker it looked. And the way I looked at it was the U.S. taxpayers financed the purchase. And so the return to those taxpayers was any tax revenue that was received from Alaska minus the expenses of governing Alaska. And you know, a lot of the other economic benefits like trade and other sorts of things could have been obtained without the purchase.
It's conventional wisdom that this was such a great deal. And Alaska has so many natural resources and other things. Why ultimately has this been a loss for taxpayers?
Well, I think mostly the cost of governing it. Alaska is very expensive to govern, always has been. It's a remote place, and the weather conditions make things difficult. There have also been natural disasters like the earthquake of 1964 that ended up being very expensive for the federal government. And projects like the Alaska Railroad turned out to be much more difficult than anticipated and cost a lot more money.
What about some of the other purchases that we made or acquisitions that we made? How do those stack up?
Well, turns out, for example, that Hawaii was a positive net present value project.
Oh, really?
The acquisition cost of Hawaii was much lower. We just assumed some debt of Hawaii, and the tax revenue has been positive ever since.
David Barker is a professor of finance at the University of Iowa. David, thank you.
Thank you.
Today, Virgin Galactic unveils Spaceship 2 for public viewing in the Mojave Desert. Several hundred people have paid $200,000 for what would be a 2.5-hour trip into space, including about 5 minutes of zero gravity, which sounds expensive. But after a couple months of holiday eating, can you really put a price on 5 minutes of weightlessness? In Los Angeles, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith, and this is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.